नमो विष्णुपदाय कृष्ण प्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामिनिति नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रसारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंदा श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्त वृंदा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा। So thank you all very much for joining today's session. So we have been discussing from Bhagavad Gita, second chapter, and we have been discussing from Krishna instructing Arjuna about the knowledge of the soul, because Arjuna has given various reasons for not wanting to fight, and he has just surrendered to Krishna as a disciple, and he said, Shishyasteham Shadimam Tvam Prapannam, I am a soul surrendered unto you, so please tell me what I should do. So what am I supposed to do? And now Krishna is starting to answer. I will do a quick recap of what we have seen till now. So Krishna says, Ashochyan Anvashochastvam Pragyavadamscha Bhashase Gatasun Agatasunscha Nanushochanti Panditaha. He says that, my dear Arjuna, you are talking big words like a very big pandit, but don't you know that a knowledgeable person does not lament for Gatasun Agatasunscha. A knowledgeable person does not lament for Gata Asuhu, that from which the life air leaves, which is the gross body. Agata asuhu, that from which the life air does not leave, that refers to the subtle body, and cha refers to the soul. So an intelligent person, a pandita, does not lament for the loss of gross body, because gross body is getting destroyed at every moment, even when this person is so called alive, because that is the nature of gross body. Agata asuhu, that from which the life air does not leave, that is the subtle body, because the subtle body is carried from one gross body to the other gross body by the soul. Vayur Gandha Nivashayat, as Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita. Right? So, an intelligent person does not lament for the destruction of the subtle body, because destruction of the subtle body means liberation. So, which intelligent person, one who understands the nature of liberation, will not want liberation? So, therefore, why would an intelligent person lament for the destruction of the subtle body? And cha indicates the soul. So he does not lament for the destruction of the soul, because soul does not get destroyed. So therefore he says, what are you lamenting for, Arjuna? And then he says, natvevaham jatunasham natvam neme janadipa Nachaivana Bhavishyamaha Sarvevaya Mataparam. So he says that there was never a time when I did not exist, there was never a time when you did not exist, to Arjuna, and there was never a time when none of these other kings existed, and there will never ever be a time when any of us will cease to exist. Right? So he is asking Arjuna, that Arjuna, when you are lamenting for the death of a person, when you see the death of a person you love, you lament. But who is the object of affection while the person is living? Is it the soul or the body? That's what he is telling. Okay, you are lamenting when the person dies. But let me ask you something. When the person is alive, who is the object of affection for you? Is it the soul or is it the body? What is the object of affection? So, if Arjuna says, oh, it is the soul which is the object of affection, then actually one does not have to, if the soul is the object of affection, then the soul cannot be the object of lamentation, because the soul, it does not, the soul does not get destroyed. That's what he is telling. There was never a time when I did not exist. There was never a time when you did not exist. There was never a time when these kings did not exist. And there shall never ever be a time when any of us would cease to exist. So therefore he is telling, if the object of affection, if you say, is the soul, then that soul cannot be the object of lamentation, because the soul does not get destroyed. The soul is eternal. That is the first teaching that Krishna is giving to Arjuna here in this 12th verse. Natve vaham jatunasham natvam neme janadipa nachaiva na bhavishyamah sarve vayam ataparam. Right? So then he says, Dehinosmin yatade kaumaram yavanam jara tata dehantara praptir dhirastatra namuyati. So then if Arjuna may say, look, look, actually the object of affection is not the soul, but it is the body. Then he says, if you say that the object of affection is the body, then even when the person is so-called alive, the body is changing, right? From Kaumaram to Yavanam to Jara, right? So when it is moving from Kaumaram to Yavana, the Kaumara body is lost and and the Yavana body has manifested. You don't lament for the loss of Kaumara body. So then why do you have to lament then for the loss of body? Because the body is anyway getting lost. So he says that, but when the body changes from Yavanam to Jara, from a youthful body to an old body, then there is definitely lamentation. He says, yes, what you say is right. But after that body is gone, when the person will get a new fresh body, then what is the need for lamentation? That is the point he is making. So if your object of body, if your object of affection while the person is alive, if the object of affection is soul, then you need not lament for the loss of soul, because the soul is eternal. If while he is living, if the object of affection is body, then body is always changing. Why do you have to only lament when the body changes from an old body to a new body? That is the point. So that is the point that Krishna is making here. Very powerful, very simple, but very profound theory that he is presenting. This is where we ended our discussion last week. Before we start today's discussion, if there are any quick comments, discussion points, questions, we can discuss for a few minutes before we move on to the next verse. Anything anyone would like to share, add, discuss? Anyone? Okay. So now let's then move on to the next verse. Krishna says, this is the famous verse, you all know this verse, right? Matra sparshastu kaunteya shitoshna sukha dukkadaha agama payino nityas samstitikshasva bharata. So here, that he says, O Kaunteya, O son of Kunti, Matra sparshaha, the experience of the sense objects. Sparsha means touch, or matra means sense objects. When matra touches with the senses, that when the matra sparsha takes place, when the rasgulla touches the tongue, when a beautiful form touches the eyes, when a beautiful sound touches the ears, when a very soft item touches the skin, right? When a very wonderful fragrance touches the nose, this is called as matra sparsha. So when such interactions happen between the sense object and the senses, it leads to shita, ushna, sukha, dukkada. It gives sensations of cold and hot, happiness and distress, right? So when the sense objects come in touch with the sense objects, when the senses come in touch with the sense objects, it leads to various kinds of sensations and emotions based on our past experience with those particular objects. Particular emotions are generated, right? So when you look at your parents, depending on how your childhood has been, you know, if it was pleasant, then when your eyes touch the palm of your father or mother, then there is joy, gratitude. These kind of emotions are generated. But if you have had a very troubled, some people have very troubled childhood, they don't have very good past. And when their eyes touch the palm of the parents, then it may generate not so favorable emotions like dejection, disappointment, sometimes hatred, you know, these kind of emotions may generate. So he says, understand, O Arjuna, that when the senses come in touch with the sense objects, they give sensations of hot, cold, and emotions such as happiness and distress. But the nature of these kind of matra sparsha, you know, the these kind of experiences is anityaha. It is always temporary. Agama, they appear, and apayana, they disappear. This is the nature of material sensations and material emotions. Material sensations and material emotions, they are temporary, they appear and disappear. Because he is telling, Arjuna may tell, look, I understand that that, you know, the soul is eternal, as you mentioned in the 12th verse. And I also understand that the body is temporary and it is always changing. So in one sense, nothing new has happened. The soul is still alive. When death happens, the soul is still alive. And the body is not undergoing any new transformation that it does not undergo while the person is alive. So I totally understand from a theoretical point of view that there is no need for me to lament for the loss of body or soul. That I totally understand from you, O Krishna. But when the soul moves from one body to another body, I got so much joy relating with Bhishma Dev when the soul of Bhishma Dev is residing in the body of Bhishma Dev. But when that soul will eventually move to another small child's body, even though the body will always get destroyed and the soul will be eternal, but still I will not get the association and joy and guidance that I am getting from when this Bhishma Dev's soul residing in the Bhishma Dev's body. But when that soul moves on to another body, I will not get the association of Bhishma Dev. I will not get the association of Dronacharya. I will not get the joy of interacting with them. So, so isn't that a reasonable reason to lament? Of not getting that association, that joy. So Krishna says, look, in this material world, when a sense object comes in touch with the senses, with a sense, depending on its previous experience, it generates it generates a particular sensation and a particular emotion. When a rasgulla touches your tongue, it generates a sensation of sweetness. Okay. And depending on your previous experience of coming in, of relishing that rasgulla, it may generate the emotion of joy. But neither is the sensation sweetness, nor is that sensation of joy, nor is that emotion of joy an eternal sensation or emotion. In the material world, every sensory experience and every emotion that is generated out of a sensory experience is temporary, anityaha, and they come and go. Agama apayana. So therefore, do you think when Bhishma Dev leaves, you will be eternally lamenting? No. You will lament for a while, and after some time, that emotion will go away. That lamentation will remain till you become hungry. So, and till that time, when that lamentation is overwhelming, you will be able to tolerate your hunger. Initially, you will not even notice your hunger. Then after some time, when the hunger increases, you'll start noticing your hunger. And after some time, the hunger will become more overwhelming than your lamentation. Then you will stop noticing your lamentation and start addressing your hunger. And once the hunger subsides, then again the lamentation may take over. And then after some time, because you have been deprived of sleep, your sensation of sleep will slowly start coming up. Then when it becomes very significant, you will start forgetting your lamentation. Then you will start sleeping and you will completely forget your lamentation. In this way, in the material life, every sensory experience and every emotion that is generated out of a sensory experience is temporary. It will come and go. So therefore, I do very much appreciate and empathize with the point that you are raising, Arjuna, that even though you may understand that the soul is eternal and the body is ever changing, but still when the soul moves from one body to another body, you will no longer get the same warmth and affection that you have been getting from one particular member. Like when a father leaves his body, the body of the father has always been changing and the soul is always eternal. But when the soul moves to another body and the father takes the body of a small child or baby, the son who has been experiencing that warmth and affection from the father, he will no longer receive that warmth and affection from that baby. So there is a reason to lament. So Krishna says, I very much empathize with this feeling of yours. But what I want you to understand, Arjuna, is just reflect and think which emotion of yours, which material emotion of yours has been persistent and constant for days and weeks and months and years. Nothing. Every material emotion has come, it has gone. Every material sensory experience has come and it has gone. So therefore, my request to you is, please tolerate and it will go away. That is the recommendation that Krishna is giving to Arjuna, that just tolerate. Tam stitikshasva bharata. Any material urge that comes, an urge for, connecting a sense with a sense object. You want to put a rasgulla in your mouth and the urge sometimes can be very, very powerful. Like sometimes you get these sweet cravings, especially, I get my sweet cravings whenever I eat a full meal. And when my stomach is full, I really get, I just want at least a small piece of sweet. That craving is there. Now Krishna says, look, these kind of cravings will come and go. So you just tolerate. That's what he's telling. When you tolerate, then gradually it will go away. Okay. So that is the point that he is making here. So Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes here, yes, this is indeed true. I have shown such indiscretion. So this is Arjuna speaking. My mind producing nonsense, uselessly covered lamentation and bewilderment causes me suffering. Then Krishna says, it is not the mind alone. The various functions of the mind in the form of all the senses, such as skin, experience their sense objects produce this problem, which is anartha. One has the experience of the sense objects, sparsha. When the sense object comes in touch with the sense, then it creates this experience. In the hot season, cold water is pleasant, and in the cold sea, it is very painful. This happens in an uncontrolled manner, appearing and disappearing. Agama apayana, whether you want or not, but it will come and go. Whether you want winter or not, winter will come. Whether you want summer or not, summer will come. Right? So you cannot choose not to experience any of these things. Right? Therefore, you must tolerate these experiences of the sense objects because you don't have a choice. Tolerating them is a part of dharma prescribed in the scriptures. Because if you don't tolerate and indulge in everything, then there will be certain things which are adharmic. Then you will start indulging in them also because that's how you have trained. Whenever there is a craving, indulge. Whenever there is a craving, indulge. Whenever there is a craving, indulge. And then a craving will come for an adharmic thing. And because you have trained your body, your stimulus response system, by always responding immediately as soon as a stimulus comes. So whenever an adharmic desire also comes, then your natural stimulus response system will go for fulfilling it. So therefore, he said, train your stimulus response system to tolerate. That's what he's telling. One should not give up the bath in the month of Magh because it gives pain, since it's prescribed in the scriptures. Following dharma gradually rids one of all good qualities. All low qualities, I'm sorry. So when one follows whatever is one's duty, irrespective of whether it is painful or pleasurable, then gradually one gives up all the low qualities. That's what he is indicating here. He says, you must tolerate that sons give joy when they are born or earn money and give sorrow when they die by their temporary appearance and disappearance. He says, this is not in your hands. So the sons, when sons are born, naturally you'll become happy. When sons die, then you'll become sorrowful. But do you have any control over the birth and death of another person? No. So better learn to tolerate. One should not give up one scripturally prescribed duty to fight by that consideration. Not performing the prescribed duty eventually brings about great problems. So that's why even in Bhakti, Srila Rupa Goswami in Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu says, one of the 64 items is to not become controlled too much by extreme emotions. Because when one becomes controlled by extreme emotions, then it becomes very difficult to think clearly and execute one's duty. So therefore, Krishna says, learn to tolerate. Train your system to tolerate and not indulge all the time. Okay. So that is what he is telling. Very interesting response to Arjuna's question that yes, I understand, but then he will not be there. You know, I will not have access to Bhishma Dev and Dronacharya, even though their soul will be eternal. But when the soul enters another body, that Dronacharya will not shower his warmth and affection upon me, and that Bhishma Dev will not shower his warmth and affection upon me, and that will cause me great pain. So Krishna says that is the nature of material world, that is the nature of material experiences in terms of sense object coming in touch with senses, and that is the nature of material emotions. Right, nothing is eternal. They will come and they will go. So even if you want good things to stay, they will not stay. Even though you want, and even if you want bad things to stay, then also they will not stay. Whether it is bad things or good things, bad emotions or good emotions, bad sensory experiences are good sensory experiences. You put a piece of rasgulla in your mouth, you feel sweet. After a few minutes, that sweetness is gone. Then you put some neem leaves in your mouth and chew. That extreme bitterness will stay for a while, and after a while, it will go away. So, therefore, similarly, so therefore, when you develop some tolerance, whenever you don't get a piece of sweet, if you have learned to tolerate, then your mind will be peaceful. And whenever you get a bitter medicine, if you learn to tolerate, then you will eat that bitter medicine and your health will become good. Right? So therefore, Krishna is telling Arjuna, learn this art of tolerating. Train your body and your mind to tolerate. So when you develop this art of tolerating, then gradually you will not be so much disturbed. So Krishna is giving a very practical advice here, not a philosophical one. He says, right, Arjuna, I accept, but please learn to tolerate. Any quick comments, discussion points, questions before we move on to the next verse? Something very profound that has been presented here by Krishna. Profound but very practical. Anything anyone would like to share? Okay. If there is nothing, then we will move ahead. Okay. Next verse, Krishna says. Okay, Shyamali Mataji has raised her hands. Yes, Mataji. Hare Krishna, Shyamali Mataji. I thought I unmuted you. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hari Bol.
Yes, Prabhu.
Dandavat Prabhu, this is Shyamlal Das.
Yes, Dandavat Prabhu.
So, Prabhu, yes, we should tolerate the good and the bad, the good experiences and the bad experiences. Mm-hmm. But many times, this also is interpreted as weakness of character, in the sense, because you cannot rise to injustice, you so say that I'm tolerating. So
okay,
where do you draw the line that this is my tolerance,
mm-hmm,
of I'm tolerating the good and the bad experience,
mm-hmm,
but at the same time I'm not tolerating any injustice. It is part of Indian history that so much has the Indian populace suffered,
mm-hmm,
with, you know, the Mughal Raj, the British Raj and everything.
Mm-hmm.
To some extent, it was that the Indian populace is Copulus is basically tolerant.
Mm-hmm.
That was one understanding.
Okay.
I mean, I hope I am wording myself clearly.
I can understand, bro. Then in one sense, your sentence is a little bit like an oxymoron, I would say. Because if you say that they are tolerant, then where is the suffering? So you say that they suffered because they tolerated. I mean, when there is suffering to the extent that there is intolerance, to that extent only there is suffering. So if one is able to tolerate, then where is the suffering in one sense? The second thing is, okay, even though we tolerated, that's why we suffered during the Mughal Raj. Fine. So then how do you respond? Then the question is, you respond according to your role models, the way your role models show you. So now we have to choose who your role models are, and then you respond according to your role models, right? So if your role models have been Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, if your role models have been Srila Prabhupada, if your role models have been Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, Srila Jiva Goswami, Srila Rupa Goswami, in one sense, if they are your role models, then you will have to respond according the way they have responded. Whomever I have told, most of them have been under full-fledged Mughal Raj. So how they responded to, and it's not that they did not torture, you know Vrindavan's history. You know, always there has been some Mughal attack. Govindji's temple is the proof for Mughal attack. And there are so many deities which have been desecrated. They had to be shifted and all that. So now we have to decide who are our role models, and we can choose to respond in a way that they have responded. Or if you are going to choose some freedom fighter or someone as our role model and respond in that way, that's fine, you know. So we have to choose who is that role model, and from there you have to learn what to tolerate, what not to tolerate. So if they have tolerated certain things, then we understand that these things are fit to be tolerated. And if they have not tolerated a few things and responded, for example, Rupa Goswami tells in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that one should not tolerate blasphemy of a devotee. So how do you respond? You immediately leave that place. You immediately leave that place. You should not hear that blasphemy. That is one of the prominent ways in which most of us should be responding to this. So therefore, we have had all through our Goswami's lives, during Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life, during the Goswami's lives, they all have been under Mughal rule, and they all have responded to the Mughal rule in a particular way. So in whatever way they responded, we should follow in that same footstep. That's my understanding.
Prabhuji, Hariba.
Yes, Prabhu.
So if we say that the Goswamis are our role models,
mm-hmm.
the Goswamis were perfect saints.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they had given up everything in their lives,
mm-hmm.
and then taken up to the life of a Goswami.
Okay.
I mean, most of us are grihasthas.
Okay.
So, as grihasthas, or some of us would be, you know, maybe administrators also, some would be working in whichever position they are working.
Mm-hmm.
So, if I am working as a doctor, I should mm-hmm. have a role model as a doctor.
Yeah.
I cannot say that I am a doctor, but my role model is a sadhu.
Mm-hmm.
So, I can have a sadhu as my role model in terms of principles,
mm-hmm.
but as far as the way I deal with and my practice, and you know, I must have a role model. I have my spiritual textbooks, the mm-hmm. Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita and Charitamrita,
mm-hmm.
but I do not practice medicine based on those books.
Correct.
So, I hope you understand when we say.
Yeah. I understand. So, yes, the Goswamis did renounce everything. So, but they did leave literatures which are applicable to householder devotees also who are practicing a worldly profession. So, we can try to follow that. Prabhupada's Bhaktivedanta purports are there. It's not that Prabhupada's purports were meant only for the renounced order of life. I mean, of course, you don't have to, it's not a book on your pharmacology. You cannot, prescribe medicines based on Prabhupada's books. But then the generic principles of how you can follow, how you should practice your profession, the generic principles you can always learn from there. The details of how do you practice and all that, you definitely need your own professors or your senior doctors from whom you can learn. But when it comes to generic principles, for that you can always refer to their books. And not all of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's followers and were actually Goswamis. Many of them were actually Grihasthas only. And they did have a family which they tried to take care. So we can always take guidance. That's my understanding. Ramlal Prabhu?
Sorry. I may be probing this a little too much. I may be probing this a little too much.
No. It's relevant, Prabhu. Please ask.
Yeah. My question still remains that like supposing somebody is in the administrative category, mm-hmm. and he has to deal with whatever problems or for that matter, let's come directly to the point. We see so many of these conversions which are taking place.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at one angle, we may say just tolerate it. It's okay. Just what else? This is what Krishna has said in the Bhagavad Gita. But from another angle,
mm-hmm.
Tolerating this is it's just accepting the injustice in one way.
No, I mean, Prabhu, I am just trying to understand how is conversion an injustice. I am just trying to understand.
I mean,
in our movement also, aren't we trying to do that? I mean, Prabhupada went all the way to the West and transformed many people. Most of our spiritual masters have been practitioners of either Judaism or Christianity. So now why all of a sudden we are feeling that it is injustice? I'm just trying to understand.
Well, if people are transformed and they accept a religion, that is good.
Mm-hmm.
But if they are lured into accepting something
mm-hmm.
without much understanding,
mm-hmm.
and then many times we are just mute spectators.
Prabhuji, we have been mute spectators into everything. Practically, why speak about religion? we have been mute spectators to ourselves and our children getting helplessly dragged into materialism. First thing we should be intolerant about is that. So we are also mute spectators to that. So at least a materialistic person is taking up to some kind of religion somewhere. And how do we respond to these kind of conversions? No, you have, Prabhupada has given you books, he has given knowledge. Who is stopping us from sharing this knowledge to others? So when you give them something tangible, why would they convert somewhere else? If you are convinced that something tangible has been given, that is our way of responding. So you go share Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said, you distribute my message and distribute my books on their merit. And the message and the books given by our acharyas, including Srila Prabhupada's, are so meritorious. When we share that with a genuine heart of compassion, why wouldn't people change? So then,
right. Agree. So
we feel very insecure about other people converting.
Ariba?
Yes, Prabhu. Yes, Prabhu.
Yeah. So So my point was that only that at some level we have to be intolerant to whatever, being dragged into materialism or seeing others being lured into conversion. So there we have to express our intolerance, right?
I still don't know. Yes, in one sense, but if they are lured by other religions, then we are also trying to do the same thing. We are trying to lure them by giving them something tangible. So
my point is we must express our intolerance in one way, because all said and done, it's a preaching movement. So
yeah, but our preaching is not in response to or in competition to someone else, some other preachers of other religions doing it better. In one sense, Prabhupada has never said, Prabhupada has never he has always asked how many books were distributed. He never asked, in comparison to the number of Bibles distributed, how many Bhagavad Gitas have been distributed. That has been Prabhupada's listing, in one sense.
Right. Agreed. My question was only this, that at certain levels, at certain points, we may come across a situation where we would have to express our intolerance. So
yeah, that is true. I agree. True. Like, say, for example,
we should respond in that manner so that
Prabhuji, can I say something?
Yes,
Shyamli here. Yes, Prabhuji, yes, they say now that there is a saying that intolerance to injustice is the first step to reform.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that is probably what Prabhuji is asking.
Of course, Mataji. One thing is, it's, of course, intolerance to injustice is the first step. Is the first step to reform. Now we have to. I totally agree with this, and I am with you here. But the only thing is, whom are we going to accept as authorities to define what constitutes injustice and what does not constitute injustice? What is meant to be tolerated and what is meant to be not tolerated? That is the question. That's all. So the principle is right. The principle that you are presenting and the principle that Shyamalal Prabhu is presenting, I agree with the principle. But my only question is, who are our role models who are going to define what is meant to be tolerated and what is meant to be not tolerated. That's all. That is the only thing. As long as those role models are our acharyas, current acharyas and the previous acharyas, as long as they define that, oh, this is a cause which is worth fighting, this is a cause which is worth tolerating, and based on their lives and their precepts, if we accept, if we fight for those causes for which they have fought, and if we tolerate for those causes which they have tolerated, then it is perfectly fine. I don't say that universally everything should be tolerated and everything should be fought for. So, but we have to see who is going to guide us and tell us what is to be tolerated and what is to be fought. That is the only point. Is that relevant, Madhuri? Hare Krishna.
Yeah, perfect. Okay, done.
Thank you. ISKCON NBCC. I don't know who it is. Yes.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji, Dhanot Pranam. Prabhuji, I wanted to ask that, say, for example, we have lost one of our loved ones and we meet the spiritual master. So before meeting the spiritual master, we are lamenting for the loss of a loved one. But as soon as we meet the spiritual master and he gives us some words of wisdom, immediately, you know, you come back to your normal position. Obviously, there is a little, you know, sadness that we have lost our loved ones and, you know, that attachment is still there. But then you bounce back to the normal. So I'm always amazed that, how is it that only the words of wisdom from the spiritual master actually bring you back to the normal, or before meeting him, you're just lamenting? So what is that magic that he actually, you know, tells you and you get, you know, back to your normal, Prabhuji? This is what I wanted to ask.
Well, one thing is certainly the trust that we have on that personality. So definitely, when that trust is there in that personality, and second thing is that spiritual purity and stature of that personality. So when they speak, it comes with years and decades of pure practice and solid realizations. So when they speak, they have practiced what they are speaking. So it has some immediate impact. And it also comes with their prayers and blessings, which are very, very potent. So therefore, you know, as Prabhupada says, purity is the force. So when such people speak, it comes with so much purity. So therefore, the force is there. And on our side, we have so much trust in that personality. So when it comes, we are also very receptive, and it has an immediate impact. That's my understanding. Is that relevant, Madhuri?
Yes, Prabhuji. Yes. Thank you, Prabhuji. Thank you.
Lokanath Prabhu.
Yes, Prabhuji. So, regarding that previous tolerance thing, am I audible?
Yes,
so,
Prabhuji.
Krishna is talking about tolerance before battle, before a war. So, my understanding is probably that we have to do our duty, and while according to Varnashram, and while doing that duty, whatever comes, miseries or happiness, that we have to tolerate. Like for a this thing, because Arjuna was a Kshatriya, so he was supposed to fight a battle. And then whatever lives are lost, even if they are the dear ones, then he is supposed to tolerate. While while if a person is a Brahmana, then he has to tolerate the miseries. Like what Shyamalal Prabhu was saying, that we didn't do anything when there were foreign invasions. So basically, it was not that we didn't do. The common citizens, they were not involved. But the kings, they did their best. Though they were Kshatriyas, they did their best. And but because of the time factor that they were supposed to dominate, so many times we lost, but we also won. Like the Marathas, they could rule for 200 years or so. So that was, I think, my understanding. So what do you feel?
Correct, Prabhu. Yeah, correct. So you brought out a very beautiful point that, yes, when one understands their adhikar, according to whether it is according to one's varnashrama or according to one's one's, you know, whether one has karma adhikar. If one has karma adhikar, then you see whether am I a brahmana or a kshatriya or a vaishya or a shudra. Then that will define what one should tolerate, what one should not be tolerating. And if one has bhakti adhikar, then the bhakti shastras and the acharyas propagating that bhakti, they define what is meant to be tolerated and what is not meant to be tolerated. So accordingly, you should tolerate which you are supposed to tolerate, and you should not tolerate that which you are not supposed to tolerate. Like extreme emotions, Rupa Goswami says tolerate. And when you see another Vaishnava being blasphemed or criticized, or Krishna being criticized, don't tolerate. So don't tolerate means what? You should respond in a way also that you should be responding, that, you know, you should leave that place. Or if you can argue and establish how the Vaishnavas was right, then you should do that. Right? So there are specific ways of responding to a challenging situation also. So we choose our battle. It's not that we should not battle. It's not that we silently tolerate everything, but we should choose our battle. And which battles to choose, we should ask our acharyas. They will decide, okay, you fight this battle and tolerate here. Don't fight. So as long as we take guidance from our acharyas and decide which battles to fight, it's perfectly fine. That's my understanding. Okay. There is a question in the chat box here. So the Lord says every time an urge comes, we should try to tolerate it. So for example, anytime I feel like eating something delicious, I must tolerate that urge. So by that, I'll become peaceful. Is it so? What is the difference between tolerance and repression? Well, the point is, it is not that every time an urge comes, we should tolerate. So Krishna says, how do you translate it into bhakti language? Because Rupa Goswami also talks about tolerance. So Rupa Goswami says, Bhogadi Tyaga Krishnasya Hetave. When for the purpose of pleasing Krishna, tolerate the urge to do something which is unfavorable for our Krishna consciousness. If something is favorable for our Krishna consciousness, just because it is an urge, we don't have to repress it. If we have an urge to chant some extra rounds, we don't have to repress it. If we have an urge to hear a class given by one spiritual master, we don't have to repress it. We don't have to tolerate it. So tolerance means whenever there is an urge to do something which is pratikul for our bhakti, we should tolerate. Whenever there is an urge to do something which is anukul for our bhakti, we don't have to tolerate. We can indulge in it. So that is the principle. Otherwise, if tolerance becomes the principle that drives our own life, then that kind of a dharma, actually Rupa Goswami says, will make the heart very hard. So he says, jnana and vairagya are not limbs of bhakti, he says. Why? Because jnana and vairagya, if they become dharma in themselves, then that actually makes the heart very hard. And bhakti is a process which actually softens the heart. So if jnana and vairagya are exclusively practiced, then without being guided by bhakti, without being, how do you practice vairagya guided by bhakti? Bhogadi tyaga krishnasya hetave. If it is pleasing to Krishna, I will give it up. If it is pleasing to Krishna, I will indulge in it. So if the pleasure of the, pleasure of the beloved drives either renunciation or enjoyment, either giving up a sense object or accepting a sense object, then it will not lead to hardness of heart. this is true even in a material relationship also, right? So when a father, a father and son are there, and there is one butterscotch ice cream, the father loves butterscotch ice cream, the son also loves butterscotch ice cream, but when the father tolerates his own urge to eat that butterscotch ice cream so that the son could eat and become happy, with the desire to please the son, when the father sacrifices that ice cream, then that kind of a tolerance or renouncing that ice cream will not make the heart hard, because there is a higher principle of wanting to please a beloved that is there. So similarly, if dry renunciation is practiced, it makes the heart hard. That person will become very irritated, angry, irritable, like that. Whereas if a person follows the principle of practicing a kind of renunciation which is a byproduct of bhakti, I will give it up because it does not please Krishna. If pleasure or displeasure of Krishna, if that principle is driving that person to accept or reject something, then that kind of renunciation does not harden the heart. It actually softens the heart. That is the principle. Okay. So, there is another question here. Steps of tolerance. Vahini Mataji has written. I don't know if there is a, if you would like to clarify that question, Mataji. I don't know what is the question there.
Yes, Prabhuji, how to tolerate was my question. Like, how do acharyas give us a process of tolerating the emotions, or like as it was written that, you know, the sukh dukh and the heat and cold. So everything has to be tolerated. So my question was like, any steps or any process of tolerating is also given or chalked out, or it differs from person to person?
Well, it all depends on a kind of you can say like a cost benefit analysis. Like the benefits of tolerating, you know, when you see or even not even cost benefit analysis, a reasonable understanding the nature of things, right? Many times when you understand that it is natural, when you statistically understand that, say for example, someone who is has terminal illness, and if the doctor says that he or she has hardly 1 or 2% chance of survival, so even though initially it may be a little bit difficult, but when you understand reality, then gradually when reality sinks in, then the ability to tolerate comes, because you don't have any because you know what is a realist, what you can realistically expect. So many times knowledge gives the ability to tolerate also. So when you get real knowledge, that's what here Krishna is explaining to Arjuna also. Look, this is the nature of material emotions and material sensory experiences. They are always temporary. They will come and they will go. Even if you want misery to stay with you, or miserable experience to stay with you forever, it cannot, because that is the nature of material miseries or material happiness. They will come, they will go, and they are always temporary. So when you understand this principle, right, internalize it, then it to some extent it helps you overcome. But all said and done, unless we have a higher goal a higher experience of like I saw, I gave the example of, you know, when you are undergoing grief, that grief will overwhelm you only till hunger takes over. When hunger takes over, then till that hunger is pacified, grief will take a backseat actually. So similarly, when we become properly nourished in our Krishna consciousness, then to the extent we become nourished in our Krishna consciousness and experiencing some tangible satisfaction through practice of Krishna consciousness, to that extent we will be able to tolerate. I don't know if it is relevant to your question, but you can share your thoughts, Madhuri.
Yeah, partially yes, but I'm still a little confused because these emotions may be temporary, but for the person who's feeling them, they get so absorbed by those emotions that they feel so real and so so permanent. They don't a person who's grieving may feel as if that grief would never go, and maybe they're not able to do anything because of that grief, not even eat. Sometimes, so certain times the emotions can be actually overwhelming, and the denial may not help. But
so that is why,
yeah, acceptance. But how, like, you know, certain times that it becomes very difficult to tolerate.
Yeah, correct. That is why Krishna is not instructing this principle to Arjuna when Abhimanyu was dead. So Arjuna is not grieving now for the loss of Bhishma and Drona. Arjuna is grieving for, he's not even grieving. He is fearful of a potential loss. So it's, the situation is not so critical. It's not ICU situation right now. So when the situation is like an ICU situation, terrible grief, at that time, you just probably have to lend a shoulder to that person to lean down and cry, and probably if possible you cry with him, you know, you commiserate with that person rather than speak philosophy. But the situation is not so critical here on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Bhishmadev is still alive, Dronacharya is still alive, all the elders are still alive. The situation is definitely not critical. So Arjuna is foreseeing what could potentially happen, and he is expressing his fear. So Krishna says, so at this stage, when still, so much grief and the modes of the lower modes of ignorance has not taken over so much, and still, critical thinking is possible. So therefore Krishna is speaking philosophy at this stage. So therefore we are not going to speak this to a person who has just lost a very near one and is absolutely broken down and grieving. So this is not something that we are suggesting that you speak to anyone at that particular stage. But situation is not so critical with Arjuna right now, and this, at this stage, some level of philosophy can be understood and assimilated. That's my point.
Yes, Prabhuji. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, that explains it. Thank you so much.
Hare Krishna. Okay. So if there is nothing more, then we will take one more verse. Because we should cover some portion also, even though post 9 o'clock, we thought we will discuss other questions, but at least one more verse, let me try to complete. And then if time permits, we'll take some further questions from the previous session. So here, next verse, Krishna says, Yam hina vyatayantyete purusham purusha rishabha samadukka sukam dhiram somritatvaya kalpate. So he says, O purusha rishabha, O best of men, dhiram purusham, that intelligent person, sama dukkha sukham, who is equal in happiness and distress, yam hina vyatayanti ete, vyatayanti means pained, and who is not pained by the sense objects, saha, that person, amritatvaya kalpate, he attains liberation. So he is now telling, because just tolerate. No, that way no one can tolerate. Now you should say, why should I tolerate? Give me some tangible reason why I should tolerate. Right? For example, if Shyamalal Prabhu's father would have told him, if Shyamalal Prabhu had said, you know, I want to go and play cricket. So if his father would have told, tolerate. Why? If you tolerate your urge to go and play, and if you study now, you will get a medical seat. And when you get a medical seat, and when you become a doctor, then this is such a glorious profession. You can save so many people's lives, and it is economically very rewarding, and it's such a satisfying profession. So therefore, it is worth tolerating the small urge to go out and play. And if you just tolerate it for just 2 short years, then you will become a doctor, and you will have a life of satisfaction, where you can, with great satisfaction, you can serve so many people. So this is a very, he has given sufficient reasons for tolerating. So Krishna is giving the same thing here. So if Arjuna may ask, hey, why should I tolerate? Why should I tolerate? He says, if an intelligent person who understands the importance of tolerating vagaries of life, and who remains equal in happiness and distress, and who is not unduly pained by the sense objects, whether they come, he does not become so excited, and when they don't come, he does not become unduly distressed. You know the result? He says liberation, mukti. So one will get mukti by this. So isn't it a reasonable reward in exchange for tolerating some suffering or happiness that comes? That's what here Arjuna is presenting. So Krishna is presenting to Arjuna. Just see what you will get in return. Yam hina vyatayantyete purusham purusha rishava samadukka sukam sukam dhiram so saha amritatvaya kalpate. The best of men, the intelligent person, best of men, Arjuna, that intelligent person who remains equal in happiness and distress, and who is not pained by the sense objects, he attains liberation. Right? So here Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes, practicing tolerance with this discernment that it agama apayino anitya, understanding that anyway it will come and go, all I need to do is just tolerate, you know. So he says, one who practices tolerance with this discernment, then the experience of the sense objects will, with passage of time, not give distress at all. This is the point. Okay. So this is the essence. Right? When one practices tolerance with this discernment, then the experience of the sense objects will, with the passage of time, not give distress at all. That is why in Nectar of Instruction also, Krishna says, the first verse is, Vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jihva vegam, udaropastha vegam, etan veganyo vishaheta dhiraha, sarvan apimam prithivimsta shishyat. So he says, One who is able to tolerate the urge of the tongue, the urge for speaking, the urge of the belly and genitals and all that, he is fit to become a guru, he says. But then how you can control, how you can say no, how you can tolerate these urges? In the next verse he says, Atyahara prayasascha prajalpo niyamagraha janasangascha laulyamcha shadbir bhaktir vinashyati. He says, the ability to tolerate an urge comes when how you respond to that, when there is an opportunity to indulge, how do you respond to it? That defines your ability to resist that urge. For example, if there is an opportunity to eat, if that person consistently overeats, then when there is a need to tolerate the urge of the tongue, he will never be able to tolerate that urge. So therefore, avoiding atyahar on a day-to-day basis actually gradually builds the ability to tolerate the urge of the tongue to eat palatable foodstuffs, right? So so therefore that's what he says, that practicing tolerance with this discernment, the experience of the sense objects will with passage of time not give distress at all. But if one does not tolerate and it says that, oh, you get an urge, indulge. If that is the response always, let's say, for example, if food is there, overeat. Food is there, overeat. Food is there, overeat. No, food is not there. You have to tolerate. You will say impossible. So I cannot tolerate. So one cannot. Right. So, but if one, when the opportunity to eat is there, if one does not overeat, if one eats moderately, then when there is no food and there is a need to tolerate, he will have the ability to tolerate, right? So that's what he is telling. So if one practices tolerance with this discernment, then the experience of the sense objects will not give distress at all with the passage of time. Gradually, they will stop troubling that person, right? When a person reaches this state where there is no distress from the objects of the senses, liberation of the Atma is close at hand. He is qualified for liberation. He says, oh, Arjuna, just imagine what I am telling you. I am just asking you to tolerate something willingly, which you can anyways not control. By not tolerating the distress of the loss of a near and dear one, you cannot stop them from dying. It's anyway not in your hands. But if you practice tolerating, anyway they will go. Whether you tolerate or not, they will anyway go. But if you practice tolerating, you will come one step closer to liberation. So now you decide whether you want to tolerate or not. Okay. So whether you tolerate or not, you know, the nature of things, in the nature will take its course anyway, whether you tolerate or not. Your tolerance or lack of tolerance is not going to stop nature from executing its job. So, but if you choose to tolerate, and or if you practice tolerating, then you will come one step closer to liberation. So now you think about it. That's what is Krishna's argument here to Arjuna. Any quick comments, discussion points before we move ahead? Anything anyone would like to share, add? Yes, Sachi Pranro.
Dandat Pranam. Please accept my humble obeisances. Prabhuji, this state of tolerating the senses, is it a permanent state? Because you sometimes seems to be crossing that stage for a duration, and again certain setback happens, and again you are getting distracted, be troubled by the by the senses. So is not a, you know, is it like that a stage will come where you will be completely out of distraction from the senses and their pleasures?
Yeah, definitely. Is it? Because definitely when one crosses the stage of anarthanavritti and comes to the stage of nishta, at the stage of nishta there is no trouble due to senses. You know, there is no trouble due to senses, because the symptoms of nishta, one of the symptoms of, there are five symptoms of nishta which in Madhurya Kadambini Shila Vishnu Chaitanya Thakur mentions. First is laya. I mean, and all these five, honestly, trust me, we'll just be shocked to hear, because we'll be wondering, is it really possible? First thing is laya, absence of laya. One will not feel sleepy while executing any Krishna conscious activity when one reaches the stage of nishta. There is no sleep. I mean, you pick up the bead bag, irrespective of whether you have had a good night's sleep or not, when one reaches the stage of nishta, because of the taste for that act of chanting or hearing, one will not feel sleepy. Then the second is vikshepa. Vikshepa means distraction. One will not be distracted by any material objects while engaging in Krishna conscious activities. Third is apratipatti. Apratipatti means temporary lack of taste. When one reaches the stage of nishta, there is no temporary lack of taste at all. And the fourth is, you know, kashaya. When one comes to the stage of nishta, he is not affected by past bad habits. Any past bad habits or, you know, cravings or addictions that the person had, at the stage of nishta, it will no longer trouble him at all. And the fifth is rasaswada. Rasaswada means whenever there is an opportunity to engage in sense gratification, one will not be able to concentrate on Krishna conscious activities. As long as that opportunity is not there, he may be able to concentrate on engaging in Krishna conscious activities. But as soon as there is an opportunity to enjoy, opportunity for sense gratification, one is not able to concentrate. This will not be seen in a person who has reached the stage of nishta. Irrespective of whether there is an opportunity for enjoyment or not, that person will certainly, it won't make any difference for him. So definitely when one reaches the stage of nishta, he will not be affected by any of these five kinds of symptoms. Yes, Prabhu, I have unmuted you. Sachi Pranku, I have unmuted you. Hare Krishna. Yes, Vrajarade Mataji.
Sorry, Prabhuji, my phone got disconnected.
Yeah. No problem, bro. Yes, go ahead.
So, yeah. Prabhuji, my doubt is actually, you were saying that stage will come, but what are the reasons that some person who may feel that he has come to that stage and for a, you know, particular duration, maybe 1 year, 2 years, whatever, and again suddenly he gets distracted? So what are the different causes for that? Like,
Your voice is breaking, Prabhu.
That person will again.
What, Prabhu? I heard till the point that one may have reached that stage, but after some point, after spending 1 year or so in that particular situation, he again feels that he has come back to where he is not able to tolerate. Is that what you mentioned?
Yes, Pruji. What I meant to say is that stage it sometimes gives us false confidence, sometimes like, oh, now I am beyond that stage. And
no.
Then,
No.
Some opportunities there, then.
No. That stage is reached by only very, 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 very mature people. So that stage, that a person who has reached that stage will never have false confidence. The stage of false confidence is very, very beginning stage. And such a person will definitely, he definitely does not fall in that category. So that stage of false confidence is called as Utsahamayi. It is the beginning stage of, unsteady devotional service. After that, there are five other stages which are higher than this stage, which also fall within unsteady devotional service only. After one crosses those five stages, then one reaches the stage of Nishta. And at the stage of Nishta, the person is so mature devotionally that there is no scope for false confidence.
But he still can fall down from the Nishta, no?
Very rare. Very rare, okay. unless some past offenses, serious offenses are there, which may sometimes it may try to pull him down. But generally, if one has steadily come to that stage of Nishta, because just like that, by insincerely practicing for many, many decades, one will never reach the stage of Nishta. If one has reached the stage of Nishta, means he has very consciously and diligently and prayerfully, he has practiced his Krishna consciousness for a long time. And only then one becomes qualified to reach the stage of Nishta. And such a person, it's generally rare that he will fall down. But under very grave circumstances, when some kind of serious offenses might happen, there is something could be possible, but generally it's very rare.
Okay, Prabhuji. Thank you. Thank you, Prabhuji. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Hare Krishna. Okay. There is some question in the chat box also. Nowadays, people ask how to tolerate Facebook and YouTube binging. Yeah, this is some serious thing, and they have to actually get some good association and good, type of alternative engagements which can actually please them. Because the kind of intoxication that these kind of social media and other such gaming and other such things can give, it actually dulls these people's brains so much and puts them too much into passion and ignorance. So you have to slowly pull them out and give them alternative, more tangible, satisfactory engagements, and it's a difficult thing. It's not very easy, because the mental health professionals have seen that the kind of addiction that these things can create is almost similar to drug addiction, actually. And when you take them off that, the symptoms, that the withdrawal symptoms that are seen when people are taken away from social media and their phones, is It has been observed that it is very similar to the kind of withdrawal symptoms that are seen in drug addicts, actually. So it's not easy, but definitely if some proper alternative is given and in a very systematic way people are helped over a period of time, it is possible for them to overcome it. So yeah, anyway, so that is about this verse, that he says, Krishna says that if you practice tolerance, then it can actually lead you till liberation. Then next verse, we still have about 3 minutes time. Let's see one more verse we can just see, and then we'll continue this discussion next week. Na sato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate satah, ubayor api drishtontas tvanayos tatvadarshibihi. He says, na bhavo vidyate. Bhavaha means permanent existence. Vidyate means exists. Na, not. Permanent existence does not exist for the body. Na abhavo vidyate. Abhavaha means cessation of existence. Non-existence, na vidyate, does not exist for the soul. Sataha, for the soul, there is no non-existence for the soul, and there is no permanent existence for the body. Tattva darshibihi, one who can see this truth, one who sees things in truth, anayoho antah drishtah, he sees this conclusion, ubhayorapi, about both these. He can see the these conclusions about the body and the soul. A tattvadarshi, one who has the ability to see the truth, will see these two things in truth and will not get disturbed by it. That's what he says. So the previous verse described the results for those who have attained that level of discrimination. So if one who has internalized this level of discrimination, so he is ready for liberation. Actually, the Shruti says that the soul is not attached to matter. Asangohi ayam purushaha. The soul has no attachment to matter. Thus, the jiva does not have a relationship with the subtle or gross bodies and their products such as lamentation and bewilderment. So, he asked this question. Parikshit Maharaj asked this question to Shukadev Goswami. That he says, yad adhatu mato brahman deharambosya dhatubihi yadrichaya hetunava bhavanto janate yata. So he says, my dear Shukadev Goswami, this body is made of dhatus. The soul is pure spirit. It is not made of any of these dhatus. How did this relationship between the absolutely material body and absolutely pure spirit, how did this relationship come? Yadrichaya hetunava. Did it come by chance? Did this relationship happen by chance? Or did it, is there a reason for this relationship to happen? This is the question asked by Shukadev Goswami, Parikshit Maharaj to Shukadev Goswami. So, in response, Shukadev Goswami says, your question is wrong. You have to first, I will first change your question. He says, your question itself is wrong. Your question is, how did this relationship between the material body and spirit soul come into place? Did it happen by chance? Or is there a reason? So, Shukadeva Goswami says, your question is wrong because in reality, there is no relationship established between the jiva and the body. There is no connection between the jiva and the gross or subtle body. He says, Atmamayam Riterajan Parasyanubhavatmanah Na Ghateta Artha Sambandah Swapna Drashtur Ivanjasa. He says that only because of ignorance, only because of this misidentification, the living entity thinks that he has a relationship with the body. It is only this avidya shakti which is creating this imaginary connection with the body, but in reality there is no connection. That's what he says. So here also Sri Vishnu Chakradhakur quoting Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, he says the jiva does not have a relationship with the subtle or gross body and their products such as lamentation and bewilderment. This relationship is caused by ignorance. This is explained in this verse. For the soul, there is no existence of lamentation and bewilderment. For their shelter, the body, since they have qualities opposed to the qualities of the soul. So the body has qualities exactly opposed to the qualities of the soul. So therefore, for the soul, there is no lamentation and bewilderment. And there is no non-existence of the jiva with its eternal form. Jiva is always present. The conclusion about these two, the body and the soul, has been seen by the seers of truth. And because they see the truth, they don't lament. So he says, by this conclusion, there will be no lamentation or bewilderment arising from seeing the body and things related to the body. Because Bhishma and others of the opposing party, as well as you and your allies, are indestructible, being eternal. How can Bhishma and others be destroyed? And why do you lament for them? This is the meaning of this verse. Right? So, Nasato vidyate bhavo nabhavo vidyate sataha Ubhayor api drishtontas tvanayos tatvadarshibihi. There is no permanence of the body and there is no destruction of the soul. So, therefore, one who has understood and internalized this truth, there is no scope for lamentation or bewilderment like that. Anyway, we will continue this discussion. We will discuss little more on this verse next week, next Friday when we come together. And there are some questions also coming up in the chat box, but already we have gone past the stipulated time. So we will end here, but we will take these questions next week. So thank you all very much for your patient listening and your enthusiastic participation. So hoping to have your association next week also, next Friday, same time, 8 to 9:30. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur Pad ki jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.